At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, I'm Tara Schmidt, a registered dietitian and host of On Nutrition, a podcast from Mayo Clinic where we dig into the latest nutrition trends and research to help you understand what's health and what's hype. There's a lot of wild stuff out there, so we'll be keeping it science-based, research-informed, and practical. Mayo Clinic's On Nutrition, new episodes every other week, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to the season finale of Nightmare on Film Street. You are about to find out what the theme was for this mysterious season of Nightmare on Film Street, but first, we're going to do an episode. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John. And yeah, stay tuned for the exciting conclusion where we reveal the secret theme and also the winners of this season's contest. If you've been listening, we've given everybody the opportunity to guess what the secret theme is. A few of you got it right, and we're going to share those results at the end of the episode. But before that, we're going to talk about Smile 2.
This may be the biggest hint to the theme.
I think so.
So we'll just put that little tease out there. But we'll talk about the theme a little bit more at the end. But Smile 2 was one that was kind of a roll of the dice pick because it's a very recent movie. A lot of people just saw it. It came out last year. Uh-huh. And it is probably the most recent thing that we've talked about this season.
Absolutely. When you said it was a roll of the dice, I thought you meant about when you went to go see it in the theater. Because I, you know, like really liked, like, oh man, the buzz for Smile 1. Like that trailer, still, I think, one of the best horror trailers we've had in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good movie, but I didn't fall in love with it immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to stand by this, that especially having seen it now a second time, Smile 2 is my favorite. It really plays in that universe in a really fun way.
Yes.
And was such a surprise for me seeing it in the theater. Yeah, because I don't know where you were, but you were somewhere.
I was getting a haircut.
Okay.
I showed up late.
I saw the first half of the movie by myself, and then you came in, and I was like, oh boy, are you going to regret what you did?
And I did. I really did. Smile 2 is great. One of those rare sequels that's better than the original, as far as I'm concerned. We recently rewatched the first Smile.
Yeah, because we wanted to be fresh on like what the lore is from the first one before we revisited the second one. And I think I'm still the same. I don't dislike Smile, but it feels more like standard fare.
Yeah, great and cinematography, good scares, little hits you a little on the head with the theme, you know.
And Smile too, it knows what its monster is. We know what its monster is, so it really elevates itself and plays like on top of it. We have a fully fleshed out movie that is existing in this world.
Yeah, it is a great sequel. I think it's what we always hope for in a sequel. It's like, okay, I already know the rules. I already know the beats, the template that you've set out from the previous movie. Show me something more.
Mm-hmm.
Do something more with it. Explore these themes in a little more detail. And also,
don't tell me too much.
Yeah, well, yeah, let's not delve too far into the backstory. Let's not open up the library books and figure out where this demon came from.
You're doing John Taffer immediately.
Yeah. You need to shut this thing down!
Bomb rescue! But what is also cool, on the other hand, is that the premise itself isn't too hard to gather.
No.
You don't necessarily have to go into Smile 2 having immediately watched the first one and been like, okay, Smile Demon. Like, where we are in the existence of horror movies that preceded it, we know this is like It Follows plus Final Destination.
With The Ring.
Yeah.
You've got 7 days.
Exactly.
The only thing you might be confused about is the intro, which basically picks up right where the first movie left off with Kyle Gallner.
I honestly think the first 2-3 scenes of the movie are the strongest thing of the film.
Oh, well. I mean, they look great. Starting a sequel, which is like the first thing you see 6 days later, you're like, hell yeah, let's get into it. If this was the first one I saw, I'd be jazzed about that.
I love a first movie that starts like that.
Yeah, well, like you're saying, this comes, we have already seen all of the curse movies from the last 20 years, from the last 100 years. Like, we know horror movies.
You're fucked up at the end of it.
Yeah.
And here we are introduced to someone who's fucked up at the end of it.
Exactly. I think you could totally walk into this without having seen the first Smile movie and get it and really enjoy the ride. So if you've skipped the first one for some reason, I mean, the movie was fucking huge. I think everybody saw it. And you're not sure about whether or not to check out the second one. One, going to be a lot of spoilers in this episode, but definitely go see it.
Yeah. So the scene opens up with this amazing long take of Kyle Gallner. He's at the very end of his 7 days ring scenario, uh-huh, being cursed by this smile demon, and he needs to pass it on in the way that you pass it on via these cursed universes. Either you die or you fucking kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, because he's a cop, he goes to a drug den.
Yep.
And it's chaotic, and it's like happening in live time, and it's a really great sequence because it's one extended take.
Yes.
And we are with this like unhinged character who's at the end of the line.
Yeah. Well, he's clearly probably spent the last 6 days, like, as far as the first movie goes, like, he was the sidekick for the lead who's been experiencing all this shit. He's been pretty skeptical of the whole scenario, as you would, and he is now at the end of his own cycle, and he knows there's no escaping from it. Maybe he's already tried, he's exhausted every avenue, but he knows that he's going to die and that he has to pass this on to somebody else. And he doesn't want to repeat what's happened several times over, where it's a whole bunch of innocent people that are getting this curse. He's like, if I got to give it to somebody, I'm going to give it to somebody who's an awful person.
Who's in a different world. So the only people that person would infect are also shitty people.
Yeah, right? So he's trying his best
quarantine.
To do something. Yeah, he's trying to quarantine it. He's trying to maybe do something good. It's like, well, if people are going to die, maybe we take out the drug dealers who have been killing pregnant women. Like, that's essentially what he's saying. Like, you killed a pregnant woman like a month ago or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, now I'm going to give this to you. Everything goes wrong because he accidentally kills the person that he's trying to pass it on to.
Yeah, and I don't fully remember from the first one, but I guess it's you have to like bear witness to a smile kill, and that's how you get it.
Yes. So like you have to witness somebody committing suicide.
Death by smile side.
Yeah, like you have to have like the trauma. There is there's a wrinkle in the first movie that I kind of forget, because they go visit a guy in a prison who realizes how he can pass it on. I think you have to murder somebody in front of somebody else. Like, it's because it is essentially passed through trauma. That is the idea. It is a trauma demon or a trauma curse. Maybe what Kyle Gallner was trying to do was kill this guy's brother in front of him.
Uh-huh.
To then pass it to him.
Uh-huh.
Which, frankly, I don't know if that's a good plan, because you're going into a violent world where these people murder people and deal with death all the time. I don't know if you'd be traumatized by that.
His brother?
Huh?
His brother.
These are hard Russian drug dealers, Kim.
Your brother's the only person you care about in that world.
I mean, yeah, sure. I just don't know if it would hit him as hard as it hits the innocent bystander who's just there trying to score a little bit of coke.
Who's just a low-level drug dealer,
yeah,
in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Uh-huh.
And then one, two, skip a few, everything goes wrong and Kyle gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it leaves a lovely, disgusting corpse.
Yeah, the truck just like smears him across the road into a smile, which then gives us our title card. and we are in this fucking movie.
Such a good opening scene. Normally, we don't get in the weeds of an opening scene this much, but it is a short film in and of itself, and I fucking loved it.
Oh, a short film that is completely different from the rest of the movie, because after seeing that, I'm like, we need to get Parker Finn to make, like, the new Bourne Identity, or, like, the new Bad Boys movie or something, because he can clearly shoot action, and I would love to see him do it.
Seeing, like, a gritty cop thriller in that kind of, like, POV following camera would be really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it comes down to the cinematographer as well. I'm going to try not to talk too much about, like, the camera work in the movie, but it is hands down one of the biggest standouts of Smile and Smile 2. The cinematographer's name is Charlie Saroff, and the camera tricks in this movie, the camera work, just, like, how the camera moves in scenarios, fucking brilliant.
I think a lot of that comes down to, too, that they are confident in their villain here. Like, they've been in the world of this demon before, and now they get to kind of play with the scares using the camera. And they do so many great pan and reveals and, like, lookaways and scares with it and perspective changes that just fuck you up. Like, there's a moment where she sees something in a mirror and we can't immediately see what it is.
Yo.
And then it's, like, the fucking guy that killed himself in front of her standing behind her with his face obscured by her. It's so good.
But what's extra creepy about that is that when...
Fucking stay there.
Well, we stay there, but she's trying to move... So that way she can see, without turning around, see what's behind her. But the fucked up thing behind her is also moving with her. So we never get to reveal the face. We only hear, like, the dripping of blood from...
His jaw falling off.
Yeah, so, like, again, if we're skipping a few, like, our lead character is a pop singer who is now sober after a very public car accident that killed
her. Breakdown, drug addiction.
Yeah, just, like, a huge downward spiral. She is rebuilding her brand, her image, and she's launching a new world tour. But the pressure's getting to her. She's got a lot of physical pain because of the car accident, which the choreography for her concerts is not helping. And
looks cool, though.
It does. But, and to try and get something more than just a Tylenol, she goes to her old drug dealer for some Vicodin, I think.
Yeah. Percocets, whatever.
Yeah, and when she goes to see him, he is at day 7.
He is, like, in it.
Yeah. I mean, he's also crazy coked out. So at first you think he's just really weird and paranoid and drugged up.
Yeah, you're like, what is this scene?
Yeah, until he smashes his fucking face in with a weight.
Smile's eyed.
It's gross and gory, and I love how...
It too! Another really great short film on its own.
Just this, that scene?
This movie is just a compilation of really great scenes.
Uh-huh. Like, hats off to Parker Finn, writer director of these movies, and to Paramount Pictures for making it. Like, even the first one, you're like, this is a little more fucked up than I thought Paramount would do, but all right, let's go.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, because I think before this, Parker Finn had only done, like, short films.
Yeah, so, the, like, Smile movies are the only features he's done so far.
That's so fucking cool.
Uh-huh.
And it just goes to show that when you have a really good, like, high level concept, they're gonna make it.
Yeah, they could make 8 more of these movies. I don't know if they...
I don't know if I need one.
I don't. Yeah, like, I would like to stay with just the two of them.
But if it's as out of the box as Smile 2 is, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I don't know if you'd get a direct sequel. That's the problem. It's like the movie Rings. Remember?
It doesn't need to be direct. Like, we could go to space.
This is always the answer. Always go to space, guys. When you have the opportunity, do it.
I'm sorry. We've just been talking about Final Destination a lot. And that's a franchise that needs to fucking go to space.
Yeah, we've been recording some episodes for Patreon where we're going through the Final Destination franchise. And I don't know if we can go more than 15 minutes without being like, I mean, a Final Destination in space would be great, right?
The International Space Station.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He's so good. Fuck. I can't help, too, though, just because we've got Final Destination on the brain, kind of relate this curse to the Final Destination curse.
Okay.
Just in terms of, like, how to get rid of it. That stuff all felt very similar.
I did think about
similar.
That as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is the idea that you have to kill somebody to pass it on to them. In Final Destination, you're allowed to steal their life, like, the time they have left in their life. There's also the idea of stopping your heart, so, like, you have to die in order for it to leave you, and which we try and do in the finale of the movie, which doesn't work out so well.
Well, and also the lead character is fucking paranoid and nobody believes them.
There's that, yeah. Death is around the corner at every moment, completely fucking everything up. I think she's a great character for this story.
I think she's fantastic. Like, this is a great world to be in for a horror film. And it was an interesting year because we got a lot of
pop star stuff.
Yeah. And even like The Substance had a very similar visual style. And it had like feminine pops and like really cool aesthetics and a great.
She's practically a singer, songwriter, dancer in those movies.
Yeah. Exactly. Like we had a lot of movies coming out that were in this same aesthetic vibe. And I was just like, yeah, like I'm on this gravy train.
Right. We had Trap. We had the Taylor Swift movie. We had The Substance. We had Smile 2. Like, it was really coming.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like a great, like, oh, are we in a season? Did you guys all talk?
Yeah, and well, even now we have Hurry Up Tomorrow. I guess there was also The Idol that was on TV, like the weekend movie.
The weekend's things.
And given all of those movies, not that Taylor Swift's movie is a horror movie, I think the one that gives you the best sort of dive into the darker side of the music industry and celebrity culture is Smile 2.
And also the human side, because you're feeling different things about this lead character. You're sympathetic of her. You're worried for her. You kind of see the darker side of her personality, like, as we realize, like, how dark her addiction got. We also see her, like, when she cracks, she kind of immediately starts blaming other people. Like, there are ego checks and moments that that person wouldn't want an outsider to see that we get to see. And it makes her feel like a full human being.
Well, the other great thing is that I don't think we needed the smile demon
for this breakdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really did.
I think this movie would almost look identical without the smile demon.
Yeah, that's fair.
She is like everybody around her. Like, it's,
I hate being like, the smile demon wasn't even there.
I'm saying the smile demon didn't need to be there.
No.
You know, like, she is living her best, worst Britney Spears moment in this movie.
Yeah.
And like, that is all you really have to say to sort of get the idea to people of what this movie's about. Like, remember how awful we all were to Britney Spears? That's what this movie is.
Yeah.
Like, this is watching that happen and unfold in real time and seeing nobody around her doing anything to help.
Yeah. And it's great, too. There's a line in the movie. I can't remember who says it. I think it might be Morris, the guy that's coming to maybe try to save the day.
Oh, the guy who keeps showing up with... Oh, so Morris. Sorry. The meet me in an abandoned pizza hut guy.
I want to kill you and then bring you back.
I want to kill you at Staten Island.
Hi,
it's
this
fine.
Is my name. I'd like to kill you and bring you back. So he phrases it like, it's a parasite, and it's clinging on to you. And if this pop singer is like ripe for another breakdown, like, this is a buffet for that demon.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, oh, this girl's got so much shit. I got so many creatures I could be.
So much room for activity in here. Yeah, like, she had to be the perfect host because she's got so much going on right now. And it's just like, feeding off of
it. Like, dead ex-boyfriend who's got a crazy smile because it's Jack Nicholson's son.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody around you pushing you to your absolute brink. Like, she does not have a good system in place that has her best interests in mind. Like, it doesn't actually have to do anything to make her life bad. Like, in the first Smile movie, like, we've got this woman who is a healthcare professional and, like, totally, like, she has some back history with mental illness, or at least her family does, but everybody around her kind of loves her and, like, has her best interests in mind and, like, is looking out for her. In this, she is actively asking for help beyond the smile demon. And is not getting it.
She's a human being where they need a machine. Like, they need somebody that's going to show up at 5 a.m., leave at midnight, and perform and be on every single time.
I know. And you see it with Mom in every goddamn scene. She's like, you should be so happy about this.
She causes me as much anxiety as, like, the creepy smile demon in the dark corner.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the movie, when you realize that Mom wasn't murdered, like, that was a bit of a hallucination, you're almost a little let down by it. Like, you know, like, I'm real sad. Like, I don't think that parents should get killed by their children when they're having breakdowns, but this woman needed to
be... yeah. You especially see that in the scene where they're doing the signing, and there's a bit of a scary moment with a stranger that's not the smile demon.
Yeah.
We also get the smile demon in this scene, but it's almost the same amount of scary as this kind of unhinged fan that she has an interaction with. And she needs to take a minute afterwards because it's like fucking borderline stalker territory.
Yeah, he's talking about how beautiful her skin is and that like
he wants to wear her face.
Yeah, 100%,
yeah. And she goes behind the curtain and mom just comes and is just like...
Like, okay, you had your allotted 10-second break.
Yeah,
get the
like,
fuck back
okay,
out there.
How are we doing? Yeah. Do you need some water? Do you need some Voss water? Would you like some water from the brand Voss?
There is so much Voss water in this movie. This movie is an unofficial trailer for Voss water. You know, it's funny. I do remember when I came into the movie theater, I missed like the first 20 minutes of the movie, maybe, right? I sat down next to you and you're like, okay, so here's what you need to know. Kyle Gallner tried to give it to a drug dealer. Drug dealer gave it to her, but she's a pop star. She's having a really hard time. Also, this movie is a commercial for Voss water. That is the synopsis recap that Kim gave me for 20 minutes of the movie.
Did you feel up to speed?
I was confused at first, and then I got right on track.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
But yeah, she's a fascinating character for this movie. I think there's a lot to play with in here. And also, we get like four dance numbers. Three of them are creepy. It's great.
And we get songs. We get Depressed Pop, which is my brand.
Do you think Parker Finn wrote those songs? Because they're bangers.
I don't think so. I was reading on Wikipedia. There is somebody who primarily wrote most of the songs.
Okay.
But Tate McRae, who's a pop star... I don't know if you know.
The name is familiar.
Okay, well, I think she's Canadian, so that's probably why I hear her all the time in my dance mix.
All the can gone.
She wrote one of the songs.
Cool.
But the actress who plays Sky Riley, Naomi Scott,
yeah.
She sings all the songs.
Yes.
I think she's sort of a musician. Like, I think she's more into acting now. But she was in the live-action Aladdin. She played Jasmine.
Oh, really?
She sang the, like, A Whole New World shit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she was clearly hired for her singing chops.
Right on.
And she's great.
Yeah.
I love the songs. I'm going to fucking put them on my Spotify.
She does an incredible job in this movie just throughout, because there are so many... Like, she is already on the verge of the deep end, like, mm-hmm. of going off the deep end. I mean, there are so many shades to it and so many levels and degrees of how bad it's getting, which is tough because she's already at, like, a level 8. But because the movie needs to progress to level 10, like, we have to visually see, like, 8.25, 8.5, 8.75.
Yeah,
she does a great job.
You can't go... so hard, so fast, because we've got an hour and a half here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. And there are so many opportunities for scares with this character. Like, we talked briefly about the signing, but there's a moment where, like, a little girl, as the smile demon shows up, and she doesn't interact or respond at all, and Sky has to just, like, sign her shirt and take a photo with her, and it's so uncomfortable.
And she's just staring at her instead of the camera for this photo. But the best part about it is the assistant who's taking these photos. Like, that's a great photo. Awesome. Yeah, you guys look so cute.
Well, because you know that this demon kind of distorts reality, because there are moments where stuff happens and then none of that happened. None of that's there. There are clothes on the ground. They're not there. There's a water ball that's broken. It's not broken.
Well, people reacting to weird stuff like that little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Or not reacting, I guess. And, like, that is what makes choosing a pop star really interesting, because we know that this demon is affecting her reality.
And even if she's behaving a little bit weird, if it's not weird enough that, you know, you're worried about her mental health or that she's going to murder her mother in 2 days, you're just gonna be like, yeah,
totally,
just like fluffing her butt,
but
right?
Well, even that little girl, like that little girl's creepy, and you would expect a human being to be like, everything okay here? But they wouldn't, because it's just an assembly line. We just need to move people through. There's no time to think about how people are doing. We just need to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, another great scare. I don't know. Is it my favorite scare of the movie? The sequence in her apartment slash hotel room with the backup dancers.
Oh, this is
the smile, yeah. Backup dancers.
This is a whole set piece. Yeah,
yeah. We're fully doing a Ghost from Mario scenario where you're looking at them, they're not moving. You're not looking at them. You look back at them, and they're in a completely different position.
Uh-huh.
And one of those positions, they are like climbing on top of each other,
yeah.
And like 12 feet to the
ceiling.
They're
like forming a giant monster. Like they move in unison as one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is very creepy.
And also their body postures are very reminiscent of the choreography,
yeah.
Of the actual backup dancers.
Yeah, like this is definitely like a visual metaphor that you could use for just talking about her having a mental breakdown, you know, irrelevant of the smile demon. Like this could, she's just in her apartment by herself, overcome with grief and pressure and
it's
everything.
Consuming her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just on top of her. And yeah, it's
climbing in her mouth.
whole arm down her throat.
The smile demon is like really big on going in there.
Yeah, just climbing inside.
Physically
you.
Going in there.
Yeah, well, there's that scene toward the end where it's like, I love being inside your skin. Like, that's great. Like, that's awesome.
Okay, so that's my one complaint about
what?
The smile demon. I hate when it talks.
Uh-oh.
I hate when it talks.
But it's in her voice when it's talking there.
Still hate when it talks.
You don't love the weird Ren and Stimpy style eyeballs that it has afterward? Like the almost like the Large Marge?
I was going to say, it looks like Large Marge.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
It's zany. I'll give you that. The final form stuff, zany.
Very zany. I think
I appreciate some Zane.
I think it's better, especially Billy Zane. I like it a lot more in this one than in the first one. In the first one, it's the first time you see it, and it just like climbs out of her mouth and stuff.
It's jarring because there is no humor to the smile world.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're seeing the final form of this demon, and you're like, oh, I see why you hide in human bodies.
No one would take you seriously.
It's quite the grim for those long elbows.
But I think it's revealed in a really well way, or a good way, here in the second one, because we have all of these steps toward how backward her reality is,
mm-hmm.
Which is probably...
Are you trying to justify those weird eyeballs, John?
I do not feel like I need to justify those weird eyeballs. Those weird eyeballs are great.
They're zany.
A+. Gold star, MVP of the movie, those weird eyeballs.
How do you feel about the talking, the demon talking?
It's a little zany. But so in this movie, like the biggest strength that this movie has, and especially against the first movie, is how much of her reality is fabricated. Because we understand.
Even at the end of the movie, you're not 100% when it starts.
I don't know if anything we saw in this movie is actually happened. Period.
Okay, I disagree there. I think it starts from when the dancers put that arm in her mouth. But
I mean, that is, yeah. But
because like, I don't think she went to the wellness clinic. Because mom's not dead.
She might have gone to the wellness clinic, but she maybe went from the wellness clinic to the
show.
To the show. And like, because we had a day to rest. So she was basically just in bed for a day, resting up. Because everything from there to the
with
show.
With a smile demon, like this egg thing is going to be real great.
Yeah, because the best friend who comes to comfort her and help her, we realize, is the smile demon.
It hasn't been real the whole time.
The whole time.
The whole time?
The whole time! Even Morris, the guy who's gonna help her and is teaching her about, like, ooh, what this smile demon is. He's the second act library of the movie, and he's also going to help her, you know, defeat it. He's fake.
Is he? I think the first meeting he might be real, but the second meeting he's not.
Oh, I mean, that's possible. So this is what I'm saying. We don't know what's real and what's not.
And, like, also, like, the charity dinner, that was real, right?
I think so. I think the charity dinner is real.
Where she pushes that old lady off the stage?
I would believe that the charity dinner is real because she's also in the bar and a whole bunch of people see
and
her.
That's when she meets Morris and they're like, we saw that video.
I mean, we didn't see the video that the kids took. Maybe she was sitting at that table by herself. We don't know. Because the Smile Demon's been doing this long enough that it knows.
This is a long con.
It is, though. Like, just the way, just the same way that Death's design is a long con. To get people to, like, miss this thing and trip over this thing and, like, don't step on that nail, but then somebody else steps on the nail and it tumbles into this giant domino effect. That is how, that the Smile Demon is playing 4D chess in this movie.
My favorite thing is once it's revealed that Gemma, the best friend character, is not real and hasn't been real the entire time.
Yeah.
We go back to, like, when we met her and all that stuff and how they were, like, how it had to be BFFs with this.
There was only one of us drinking that Voss water bottle.
With this, like, pop star during her breakdown. But she wakes up in the morning. There's two Smile Demons in this house doing different things. One of them is making matcha. Oh, I kicked my microphone.
It also, driving a car during that reveal. We realize that the Smile Demon is driving the car, which means that she's either not in the car or, well, I mean, you know, there's a flash. She blinks and then
yeah, like
she's in the driver's
seat. Regains
seat.
Control and she's the one driving.
Yeah.
That also happens during the mom death scene because she sees mom killing herself with a piece of glass. And then when she kind of like comes to, she's holding the glass and she's covered in blood.
Yeah, which you would expect. Like that's like, oh shit, yeah, no, it's playing tricks on her. But like we don't realize
but
the
it's
kind
tricks on tricks on tricks.
Tricks on tricks on tricks, yeah. And like that's something that you need in a sequel. And there are a couple rug pulls in this movie and they all feel good. They don't all feel cheap and unearned.
Yeah, normally when it's revealed to me that the last 20 minutes of what I've been watching hasn't been true, hasn't been the reality, I'm like, okay.
It doesn't always work.
But when we put you in an egg to come out on stage, you got
so that's
me
what Kim needs.
You
Kim
got
needs
me
an egg.
On board. It's actually a chrysalis, but...
Sure. She's the butterfly.
She's the butterfly.
Coming out of the cocoon. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then she's in front of the audience. She is at her seventh day.
How much of a salt in the wound is it that when she comes out of this egg and reveals like that everything that's happened in the last hour and a half has been fake and this alternate world and she's wearing the costume that she refused
that
to wear.
Right, yeah.
Like
yeah,
somebody
yeah.
just fucking put it on her and was like, you're the butterfly.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't want to be the fucking butterfly. And her mom's like, you look great as the butterfly, honey.
Looking great. Love it.
That's the worst part about this movie is not that the demon eats her at the end. It's that they put her in that fucking butterfly costume.
And the demon was just like, she's going to hate this. She's going to everybody's going to see her scars. She's going to hate.
This whole final smile denouement happens on stage in front of the entire audience. It's a full stadium tour of teenage girls who are like, you know, 12 to 17. And we see what's happening through their perspective. We are looking at them reacting.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's because the demon wants to pass itself on to like tons of people at once.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why pass up this opportunity?
But final form, Smile Demon on stage. How do you feel?
Love it. Oh, especially in this one because we see like in the first smile, like her mouth gets stretched open for the Smile Demon to walk inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lights herself on fire. It's really cool. It's a great ending. And again, similar to the end of this movie, like we see the trauma directly reflected on Kyle Gallner's face at the end of that movie. Like we don't necessarily see her dying. We see his reaction to it. What I love about this one is that when it stretches her mouth open, it's fucking weird. It is a zany mouth stretch. Like, we're going, like, corner by corner, just, like, tearing at her lips and just, like, stretching out her jaw and climbing inside.
You're opening a Christmas present, but you're taking 10 minutes to do it.
I mean, why not take your time?
Like, unfold this piece of tape. Unfold this piece of tape.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I like it. I think it's great. And then, yeah, she kills herself with her microphone. We only hear it, but by the end of the movie, it is fully embedded into her goddamn
face. I mean, it looks a little implausible, but we're in zany territory now, so yeah. It doesn't matter. She did.
She did. In front of everybody. So now that demon is passed on to potentially the entire audience. What, 30,000 people in Madison Square Garden? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people are in Madison Square Garden. Maybe 60,000 people. A lot of fucking people getting traumatized by that. It's the same as the end of the movie Rings, where the tape gets put on the internet and everybody's watching it. And that's how we end. We're like, holy shit, can't wait to see what the next Ring's gonna be like. But we haven't gotten one yet. It is a great way to end your second movie because it just opens things up. Like, the third movie could be so fucked, but I do think this is a great spot to end on. And if they do a third one, I think it kind of needs to be a prequel or something.
Just thinking about the smile demon as a parasite and just, you know, in like this post-COVID world, I was immediately thinking of like the R number of the smile demon in scene. Like, oh, this variant has really gone up in its infection rate. Because like originally it was infecting one person
one to one. Yeah.
And now it's like 1 to 40,000.
This is crazy. Yeah.
Like, we're fucked. This is the variant that's taking over.
There is no PPE that'll stop you from the smile demon.
I mean, maybe. Because you won't see the smile. Like, if they're wearing the PPE.
So this is something that I've thought of. Like, you could do a third one that's a direct sequel. And it's not that everybody has the, like everybody has a diluted form of a version of the smile demon. Like, there's only one. It kind of exists in all of them. Now,
oh, like,
all
you've
caught
it a second time, so you've got a little bit of immunity. Like,
yeah. The viral load gets spread. The vial load gets spread. Yeah, so it's now everybody's just really morose.
Mean?
Yeah, really mean, really morose. And it needs to, like,
and a little zanier.
And a little zanier, aren't we all?
I mean, that might be a better society.
Yeah, I really like Smile 2. I think it is a really solid sequel, just a great movie in general.
Yeah, there's
it looks fucking great.
Great scenes in it. The characters, the story, it's really immersive. The music is well done. The cinematography is great. Yeah, there's no surprise. This was on my favorites of last year
list.
Yeah. I can't remember where I placed it, but it was good.
And you want to tell everybody why we're talking about this movie?
Yeah,
in particular?
So all season long, we've been calling this Season X, and that's not actually the name of the season. The season, and this is the theme. This is what you guys have been guessing all season long. We're calling it Vinyl Resting Place.
Yeah. Every single movie that we talked about this season on the podcast starred a musician. Pop stars, you know, metal front men, rappers, hip-hop artists. And technically, Smile 2 also has a musician in the lead role. But because this also wasn't really going to be a movie that people could make predictions on, it was mostly here because it is about a pop star.
And we wanted to be really obvious. Like, I think Trick or Treat about halfway through was a really good clue because it was about a musician, but then it also had like Ozzy Osbourne.
Uh-huh.
And what's his name? Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons. Yeah, if we go through the list. So like, we started off with Fire Walk With Me, which stars David Bowie.
Very briefly.
Next up, we had Jennifer Lopez in The Cell. Queen Latifah was in The Bone Collector. That one we didn't, that one was maybe a little bit of a misdirect.
We were trying to be crafty at the beginning. We were going with cop thrillers, yeah. Detective thrillers, but they also had a musician in them.
And then a bit of a left turn with The Prince of Darkness that had Alice Cooper. Of course, Debbie Harry from Blondie's in Videodrome. Witches of Eastwick has Cher. Day Shift's got Snoop Dogg. Like you mentioned, Ozzy Osbourne, Gene Simmons were in Trick or Treat. Slumber Party Massacre 2. This one's tricky because this one's about musicians as well. And as we discussed and we all learned on Joe Bob Briggs, the guy who plays the villain, the driller killer, was a musician. And like, that was his intended goal. He started out as a musician, became an actor, is now just a Nepo baby.
Yeah, but he's an heir and owns a baseball team now.
Yeah, exactly. Urban Legend has Jared Leto from 30 Seconds to Mars.
But don't ask Jared Leto because he doesn't think he was in that movie.
and of course, Tina Turner was in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
What a fun season.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. There were a lot of great guesses.
Yeah, we tricked a lot of people with the cop thriller start. We had a lot of guesses in that vein, like the mystery, FBI, thriller, psychological horror thing. But quite a few of you caught on as we got later into the season.
Yeah. Like, there were some really good guesses. And honestly, just kind of like people that were guessing around the outside, like, where is my mind? Like, what is reality? It's, you know, cult classics. Cop Body Swap was one of them, which
Cop
I thought
body
which
swap.
Really works for some of the movies that we talked about. And then, yeah, inevitably, like, as time went on, people started to figure it out.
Because you're like, how the fuck does Thunderdome fit in this?
We have a handful of people who guessed it correctly, and we are giving a prize pack to the person who guessed it correct first. Do you want to give us that name there, Kim? Who's winning our prize pack?
Yeah, so this prize pack is going to contain a signed copy of our book, Cocktails from the Crypt, as well as some props from the book and some other cool goodies, as well as a copy of Trick or Treat from earlier in the season.
That's right. You're going to get the new 4K copy of Trick or Treat from Synapse.
Thank you, Synapse.
And thank you, MVD Entertainment.
And so the very first person who guessed correctly was Shane Willard. Congrats, Shane. You are getting the prize pack.
Way to go, Shane.
We have emailed you.
Yeah, woo! And we got a couple other people, obviously, that guessed it right, and, you know, we picked a couple names at random. So we've got two runner-ups as well, Eric Burns and Ashley Gilroy. You're going to win yourself a cool Nightmare on Film Street t-shirt. Your choice from the store. So check out your email inbox, maybe check your spam folder. We're going to send you an email to get your mailing address. Congrats again. Great guesses. And, oh, man, it has been very fun to do this series.
I really have really been loving the season format, and I cannot wait. We've got another amazing season planned.
Oh, yeah.
Our next season is going to be such a fun one. When we start getting guesses for that, it's going to be wild.
I've got ludicrous season ideas for, like, the next 10 years. I feel like a Google Docs folder filled with the craziest shit. Like, some that like we can't do because, like, nobody's ever going to guess it. But some that are just too fucking silly and just right up our alley, and I know you guys are going to love them. I'm really looking forward to these next few seasons of the podcast.
But we will be taking a bit of a break in between the end of this season to the start of the next season to allow us some time to record. In the meantime, we have just started a special series on the Final Destination films that we are recording for our supporters on Patreon. If you want to check that out, if you need more Nightmare on Film Street while you're waiting for the main feed, head to nofspodcast.com/fiendclub or patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
Yeah, that's where you'll also find info on watch parties that we host monthly. We do also record Drive Home from the Drive-In reviews of new movies that are in the theater. You know, we just recently recorded an episode for Bring Her Back, as well as Final Destination, Bloodlines, Until Dawn, and everything else that's coming out the rest of this summer, including the new fucking Conjuring movie that actually looks really good. Same editor as Smile 2, so maybe that means something good.
Interesting.
Really looking forward to that. It's the last rites. Oh, why is this their last case? They lived. Like, they're not gonna, it's based on real people. We know that those real people survived their last case. It's totally fine.
And embellished things.
But yeah, head over to the Fiend Club. It's the easiest way to support the show and to get bonus episodes of the podcast.
Congrats to our three winners for guessing this season correctly and everybody who guessed it correctly. Hopefully you're luckier on the next season and you get drawn from the hat. But until next time, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.